Chapter 146. I assisted an explosion, when the time Mr. Micawber had appointed so mysteriously was within 24 hours of being come, my aunt and I consulted how we should proceed, for my aunt was very unwilling to leave Dora. Ah! How easily I carried Dora up and downstairs now! We were disposed, notwithstanding Mr. Micawber's stipulation for my aunt's attendance, to arrange that she should stay at home, and be represented by Mr. Dick and me. In short, we had resolved to take this course, when Dora again unsettled us by declaring that she never would forgive herself, and never would forgive her bad boy, if my aunt remained behind, on any pretense. I won't speak to you, apostrophe said Dora, shaking her curls at my aunt. I'll be disagreeable. I'll make Jip bark at you all day. I shall be sure that you really are a cross old thing, if you don't go. Apostrophe apostrophe, tut, blossom. Apostrophe apostrophe, laugh my aunt. You know you can't do without me. Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, I can, apostrophe said Dora. You are no use to me at all. You never run up and downstairs for me, all day long. You never sit and tell me stories about Dodie, when his shoes were worn out, and he was covered with dust. Oh, what a poor little mite of a fellow. You never do anything at all to please me, do you, dear? Apostrophe apostrophe Dora made haste to kiss my aunt, and say, yes, you do. I'm only joking. Apostrophe lest my aunt should think she really meant it. But, aunt, apostrophe said Dora, coaxingly, now listen. You must go. I shall tease you, till you let me have my own way about it. I shall lead my naughty boy such a life, if he don't make you go. I shall make myself so disagreeable, and so will Jip. You'll wish you had gone, like a good thing, forever and ever so long, if you don't go. Besides, apostrophe said Dora, putting back her hair, and looking wonderingly at my aunt and me, why shouldn't you both go? I am not very ill indeed. Am I? Apostrophe, why, what a question. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried my aunt. What a fancy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said one. Yes. I know I am a silly little thing. Apostrophe, said Dora, slowly looking from one of us to the other, and then putting up her pretty lips to kiss us as she lay upon her couch. Well then, you must both go, or I shall not believe you, and then I shall cry. Apostrophe apostrophe, I saw, in my aunt's face, that she began to give way now, and Dora brightened again, as she saw it too. You'll come back with so much to tell me, that it'll take at least a week to make me understand. Apostrophe apostrophe, said Dora. Because I know I shan't understand, for a length of time, if there's any business in it. And there's sure to be some business in it. If there's anything to add up, besides, I don't know when I shall make it out, and my bad boy will look so miserable all the time. There. Now you'll go, won't you? You'll only be gone one night, and Jip will take care of me while you are gone. Dodie will carry me upstairs before you go, and I won't come down again till you come back, and you shall take Agnes a dreadfully scolding letter from me, because she has never been to see us. Apostrophe apostrophe, we agreed, without any more consultation, that we would both go, and that Dora was a little impostor, who feigned to be rather unwell, because she liked to be petted. She was greatly pleased, and very merry. And we four, that is to say, my aunt, Mr. Dick, Traddles, and I, went down to Canterbury by the Dover mail that night. At the hotel where Mr. Micawber had requested us to await him, which we got into, with some trouble, in the middle of the night, I found a letter, importing that he would appear in the morning punctually at 9:30. After which, we went shivering, at that uncomfortable hour, to our respective beds, through various closed passages, which smelt as if they had been steeped for ages, in a solution of soup and stables. Early in the morning, I sauntered through the dear old tranquil streets, and again mingled with the shadows of the venerable gateways and churches. The rooks were sailing about the cathedral towers, and the towers themselves, overlooking many a long unaltered mile of the rich country and its pleasant streams, were cutting the bright morning air, as if there were no such thing as change on earth. Yet the bells, when they sounded, told me sorrowfully of change in everything, told me of their own age, and my pretty Dora's youth, and of the many, never old, who had lived and loved and died, while the reverberations of the bells had hummed through the rusty armor of the Black Prince hanging up within, and, motes upon the deep of time, had lost themselves in air, as circles do in water. I looked at the old house from the corner of the street, but did not go nearer to it, lest, being observed, I might unwittingly do any harm to the design I had come to aid. The early sun was striking edgewise on its gables and lattice windows, touching them with gold, and some beams of its old peace seemed to touch my heart. I strolled into the country for an hour or so, and then returned by the main street, which in the interval had shaken off its last night's sleep. Among those who were stirring in the shops, I saw my ancient enemy the butcher, now advanced to top boots and a baby, and in business for himself. He was nursing the baby, and appeared to be a benignant member of society. We all became very anxious and impatient when we sat down to breakfast. As it approached nearer and nearer to 9:30, our restless expectation of Mr. Micawber increased. At last we made no more pretense of attending to the meal, which, except with Mr. Dick, had been a mere form from the first, but my aunt walked up and down the room, Traddles sat upon the sofa affecting to read the paper with his eyes on the ceiling, and I looked out of the window, to give early notice of Mr. Micawber's coming. Nor had I long to watch, for, at the first chime of the half hour, he appeared in the street. "Here he is," apostrophe said I, "and not in his legal attire." Apostrophe, my aunt tied the strings of her bonnet she had come down to breakfast in it, and put on her shawl, as if she were ready for anything that was resolute and uncompromising. Traddles buttoned his coat with a determined air. Mr. Dick, disturbed by these formidable appearances, but feeling it necessary to imitate them, pulled his hat, with both hands, as firmly over his ears as he possibly could, and instantly took it off again, to welcome Mr. Micawber. "Gentlemen, and madam," apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, "good morning." "My dear sir," apostrophe to Mr. Dick, who shook hands with him violently, "you are extremely good." Apostrophe, "have you breakfasted?" Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Dick. "Have a chop." Apostrophe, "not for the world, my good sir." Apostrophe, apostrophe cried Mr. Micawber, stopping him on his way to the bell. "Appetite and myself, Mr. Dixon, have long been strangers." Apostrophe, Mr. Dixon was so well pleased with his new name, and appeared to think it so obliging in Mr. Micawber to confer it upon him, that he shook hands with him again, and laughed rather childishly. "Dick," apostrophe said my aunt, "attention." Apostrophe, Mr. Dick recovered himself, with a blush. "Now, sir," apostrophe said my aunt to Mr. Micawber, as she put on her gloves, "we are ready for Mount Vesuvius, or anything else, as soon as you please." Apostrophe, madam, apostrophe returned Mr. Micawber, "I trust you will shortly witness an eruption." "Mr. Traddles, I have your permission, I believe, to mention here, that we have been in communication together?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "it is undoubtedly the fact, Copperfield," apostrophe said Traddles, to whom I looked in surprise. Apostrophe, "Mr. Micawber has consulted me in reference to what he has in contemplation, and I have advised him to the best of my judgment." Apostrophe, "unless I deceive myself, Mr. Traddles," apostrophe pursued Mr. Micawber, "what I contemplate is a disclosure of an important nature." Apostrophe, "highly so," apostrophe said Traddles. "Perhaps, under such circumstances, madam and gentlemen," apostrophe said Mr. Micawber, "you will do me the favor to submit yourselves, for the moment, to the direction of one who, however unworthy to be regarded in any other light, but as a waif and stray upon the shore of human nature, is still your fellow man, though crushed out of his original form by individual errors, and the accumulative force of a combination of circumstances? We have perfect confidence in you, Mr. Micawber, said I, and will do what you please. Mr. Copperfield, returned Mr. Micawber, your confidence is not, at the existing juncture, ill bestowed. I would beg to be allowed a start of 5 minutes by the clock, and then to receive the present company, inquiring for Miss Wickfield, at the office of Wickfield and Heap, whose stipendiary I am. My aunt and I looked at Traddles, who nodded his approval. I have no more, observed Mr. Micawber, to say at present. With which, to my infinite surprise, he included us all in a comprehensive bow, and disappeared, his manner being extremely distant, and his face extremely pale. Traddles only smiled, and shook his head, with his hair standing upright on the top of it, when I looked to him for an explanation. So I took out my watch, and, as a last resource, counted off the 5 minutes. My aunt, with her own watch in her hand, did the like. When the time was expired, Traddles gave her his arm, and we all went out together to the old house, without saying one word on the way. We found Mr. Micawber at his desk, in the turret office on the ground floor, either writing, or pretending to write, hard. The large office ruler was stuck into his waistcoat, and was not so well concealed, but that a foot or more of that instrument protruded from his bosom, like a new kind of shirt frill. As it appeared to me that I was expected to speak, I said aloud, "How do you do, Mr. Micawber?" Mr. Copperfield, said Mr. Micawber, gravely, "I hope I see you well? Is Miss Wickfield at home?" said one. Mr. Wickfield is unwell in bed, sir, of a rheumatic fever, he returned. But Miss Wickfield, I have no doubt, will be happy to see old friends. Will you walk in, sir? He preceded us to the dining room, the first room I had entered in that house, and flinging open the door of Mr. Wickfield's former office, said, in a sonorous voice, "Miss Trotwood, Mr. David Copperfield, Mr. Thomas Traddles, and Mr. Dixon." I had not seen Uriah Heep since the time of the blow. Our visit astonished him, evidently. Not the less, I dare say, because it astonished ourselves. He did not gather his eyebrows together, for he had none worth mentioning, but he frowned to that degree that he almost closed his small eyes, while the hurried raising of his grisly hand to his chin betrayed some trepidation or surprise. This was only when we were in the act of entering his room, and when I caught a glance at him over my aunt's shoulder. A moment afterwards, he was as fawning, and as humble as ever. "Well, I am sure," he said, "this is indeed an unexpected pleasure. To have, as I may say, all friends round St. Paul's at once, is a treat unlooked for. Mr. Copperfield, I hope I see you well, and if I may humbly express myself so friendly towards them as is ever your friends, whether or not. Mrs. Copperfield, sir, I hope she's getting on. We have been made quite uneasy by the poor accounts we have had of her state, lately, I do assure you." I felt ashamed to let him take my hand, but I did not know, yet, what else to do. "Things are changed in this office, Miss Trotwood, since I was an humble clerk, and held your pony, ain't they?" Said Uriah, with his sickliest smile. "But I am not changed, Miss Trotwood." Returned my aunt, "to tell you the truth, I think you are pretty constant to the promise of your youth, if that's any satisfaction to you." "Thank you, Miss Trotwood," said Uriah, writhing in his ungainly manner, "for your good opinion. Micabur, tell them to let Miss Agnes know and Mother. Mother will be quite in a state when she sees the present company. Said Uriah, setting chairs. You are not busy, Mr. Heep. Said Traddles, whose eye the cunning red eye accidentally caught, as it at once scrutinized and evaded us. No, Mr. Traddles, replied Uriah, resuming his official seat, and squeezing his bony hands, laid palm to palm between his bony knees. Not so much so as I could wish. But lawyers, sharks, and leeches, are not easily satisfied, you know. Not but what myself and Micawber have our hands pretty full, in general, on account of Mr. Wickfield's being hardly fit for any occupation, sir. But it's a pleasure as well as a duty, I am sure, to work for him. You've not been intimate with Mr. Wickfield, I think, Mr. Traddles? I believe I've only had the honor of seeing you once myself? No, I have not been intimate with Mr. Wickfield, returned Traddles. Or I might perhaps have waited on you long ago, Mr. Heep. There was something in the tone of this reply, which made Uriah look at the speaker again, with a very sinister and suspicious expression. But, seeing only Traddles, with his good-natured face, simple manner, and hair on end, he dismissed it as he replied, with a jerk of his whole body, but especially his throat. I am sorry for that, Mr. Traddles. You would have admired him as much as we all do. His little failings would only have endeared him to you the more. But if you would like to hear my fellow partner eloquently spoken of, I should refer you to Copperfield. The family is a subject he's very strong upon, if you never heard him. I was prevented from disclaiming the compliment if I should have done so, in any case, by the entrance of Agnes, now ushered in by Mr. Micawber. She was not quite so self-possessed as usual, I thought, and had evidently undergone anxiety and fatigue. But her earnest cordiality, and her quiet beauty, shone with a gentler luster for it. I saw Uriah watch her while she greeted us, and he reminded me of an ugly and rebellious genie watching a good spirit. In the meanwhile, some slight sign passed between Mr. Micawber and Traddles, and Traddles, unobserved except by me, went out. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.